Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Sami Sharif, the strategist behind over 10 million in ad spend and $25 million in revenue. Currently paid media manager at VFair, Sami brings over 12 years of real-world digital marketing experience from technical SEO to PPC. He's run campaigns for law firms, dentists, tech, SaaS, you name it. He's fluent in Google Ads, Bing, Meta Tag Manager, and every acronym in between. Sami doesn't just talk strategy, he executes it. Daily scaling with paid media and looking for performance that prints profit. Sami's the guy behind the curtain, tactical, technical, and always ROI driven. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and playbook on running paid ads for profit. So, Sami, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How you doing, man?
Thank you so much. I'm doing good, Daryl. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we were just talking about the power of paid ads right for this call and the importance of family and having good people around you. Before I even get into any of the paid ad stuff, though, Sami, I want to ask, how did you even get into advertising and digital marketing? Were your parents in marketing? Are you carrying the family torch?
Not at all. So I grew up in a typical Asian family. My dad was a medical doctor. He was an eye specialist, ophthalmologist. And my mom was a housewife. My dad always wanted me to be a doctor like him, but I saw my elder sister being a doctor. A lot of studying. You have to be a bookworm for being a doctor. And I was not that sort. So I started off liking maths. I went into engineering, did my bachelor's in software engineering. And then after graduation, I got a job as a content writer. I started off from content writing, learned about SEO. In fact, I wrote a few blogs for a Pakistani blog, PakReels, basically. I did a few articles there, started off my SEO from there, and then spent some time in SEO and pivoted towards paid media because a mentor of mine was my manager. He was moving to Dubai for a bigger post and a bigger job at a big franchise in the UAE. And he basically gave me advice saying, I think try to transition away from SEO because SEO is going to, and he was right. This was like back 10 years ago when we had this conversation where he said, SEO is good. I mean, it's good for you to have that. I believe any paid media person should have that knowledge of keyword research at an SEO level and transition towards paid ads because the world is changing. Businesses are pivoting towards more paid media because past returns is very Google algorithm dependent. Paid media also has that algorithm aspect, but it's more you put your money there. If you run it properly, you get good ROI. He basically advised me to do that. And I started watching a lot of Udemy courses. When you put your mind to something, you start seeing doors open. So there was a very good friend of mine. He's based in the UK. He met me on Facebook. He owned a medical aesthetics franchise. We turned out to become good friends. He was my client in the early days. And he really coached me on Google Ads. He bought me some Udemy courses that really taught me how to do Google Ads properly. So I really appreciate all the help I got from him. So you can say that's how I moved towards paid media. And I've been doing a lot of paid media for the last 5 years.
So you went from SEO to paid ads, the clouds parted, the pearly gates opened up, and money started raining from the sky, and you wished why you didn't change sooner. Is that how it works? You just
Not exactly, not exactly, because it's not only about running the ads, right? It's the challenge with paid media is not pressing the play button, putting in dollars, adding in a daily budget of XYZ. It's not that. It's more about really understanding why a dollar was spent on a certain keyword or a creative, and then go off page to what did the audience see on Google. And then when they saw what they clicked to, and then did they convert or not? So you need to be able to tell the story basically, bottom up. That's how it's not as easy as, I mean, that's what a lot of people, young guys that Even till today, they come to me, young people, saying, "Sami, we want to go into paid ads." So I try to tell them, you know, it's not about going into paid ads. I think first you need to understand keywords, you need to understand the metric, what are clicks, what's the CPC, what's the math behind why Google is charging you that CPC. So it's a lot of parts that play together when it comes to
We
paid
have to really
ads.
understand human psychology, I think, because one of our previous repeat guests, Glenn Livingston, when he was in the game of teaching people how to do market intelligence and online research, keyword research, he was one of the best. And he was talking about how he launched these mini info businesses, and he found that there was a massive difference between people searching for the keyword guinea pig and guinea pigs. There's only one letter, it's an S.
Exactly.
But the people searching for guinea pig, they wanted, like, they were doing a book report, like where they're from, how long they live, that. But guinea pigs were people, like parents, the guinea pig died, the kid's asleep, they need to figure out how to get a new one for the kid wakes up. Like, that was the difference between the two keywords, and it was just a single S. And so there's, like you say, there's a lot of psychological understanding in the human experience. I liked how you said the story, because what's
Being able to
different there?
narration is important when it comes to paid media.
Like, if I'm on Google search and you throw up your paid ad in front of me and you're just trying to get to the top of Google search by paying some money, that's a different thing than if you're interrupting me while I'm on YouTube or on Facebook or wherever. It's a different story. It's a different dance. You know, if I see an ad for this beautiful family restaurant and I click it and then I go in and it looks like a biker bar, there's a total disconnect from what happens when they get to the next stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that
I
you've had to
think
face?
personally, to be honest, the biggest challenge I've had is testing.
Is what?
Because it's testing. Testing creatives, testing landing pages. The reason why I say it's difficult is because it's very easy for you to get lost in those tests. Lost in the sense, if you keep your competitor as a benchmark, right? You don't have access to their data. You don't know if it's working for them. So there are a lot of marketers that believe we need to test, test, test. I'm in for testing, but I think it's important to first identify what your goal is and break that test into parts where, okay, suppose I'm at a 0.5% conversion rate, for example, on a landing page, 0.5%. I think controlling that test is important, where you have like three, four variants of that landing page. Run them out for a reasonable amount of time, 3 weeks, 4 weeks at least. Don't get lost into fast conclusions saying, okay, probably this worked for them, it should work for you. Just have your numbers straight. Understand, okay, from 0.5, if I go to 1%, so that 0.5% increase is a goal. Stop there. Let that work for some time before you start off another cycle of tests. Like I see a lot of marketers, the whole 12 months in a year, they would test like 15 different things. And when you ask them, okay, what was the result? They would get lost in the sense, okay, we made so many changes, we really don't know what worked.
There's no tracking
I
of
mean,
what was tested, what worked, what didn't work. That's a huge
that's a huge
issue.
challenge, to be honest.
Issue.
I have gone into that loop, so
Yeah.
I
And you're
can
testing
say
something you already tested. And then there's
exactly.
when people don't use, like I just went through this yesterday. I was telling my team, you guys are going to get bored of the copy and the headlines and the images before the market will, because we'd run a Google display campaign and Google tells you what the best are out of whatever the 50 assets that you upload.
Exactly.
And I was like, listen,
And
these are the best. We're not testing these anymore. We're testing the next part. So don't mess with it. And then I got some stuff and I'm like, who came up with this headline? Why are you recreating the wheel? Like, we already know, we already did this.
we already know this creative works. So let's not make major changes. Let's just change a small fraction of that creative. And yeah, change the color, for example, and see if that works.
And sometimes it's not even anything on the front end. I mean, there's different things you can do. right? Try a lower dollar offer and try to ascend them and say, you know, if depending what the offer is, doing straight up, most businesses, I think, just advertise their thing, buy my thing. But if that doesn't work, then they just give up on paid ads. But you could try driving ads to a free offer. And then when people collect the free offer, you try to upsell them.
Upsell them, yeah. I have a proper funnel, I guess.
Yeah, which is also a customer journey. And I think that's part of it too. I want to get your insights on, because people, you always hear you have to know what you're willing, what you can afford to spend to get a customer. Is that really it? Can I just decide how much I want to pay to get a customer? At some point, do some industries, is that already predetermined? Like, even if I have everything dialed in amazingly, it's just going to cost this much money to get a sale. And now I got to make the arithmetic work.
I think some industries have a set CPA.
Yeah.
Cost per acquisition is set. In fact, the industry I'm currently working in, virtual in-person events, event management is an expensive industry. And I think Google sort of determines that through the dollar value of that lead, basically. The fact is, Google knows each and everything about every business because it's the main warehouse of data. So if, for example, the average ticket value of a product is around $5,000, Google is going to make sure it charges you enough so that you pay enough to get that. So CPA might be 1500, 2000 for that one lead. It really depends. And the math behind it is actually competition.
Right.
We need to remember that you're not the only one advertising, and it's a shared space. There are 100 other people aggressively bidding.
Right.
So that's what determines how expensive your acquisition would be.
Yeah. Well, to a certain extent, I think
Because
it's like airlines. They busted airlines for manipulating prices based off of behavior, not on supply and demand. I don't know how it worked, but I remember that story came out probably
and
around
I think, to be honest, Google is going to get busted very soon.
the 800-pound gorilla. What are you going to
Exactly.
do? I'm mad at you, Google. I'm going to put my online business where? Where are you going to put it? You can put it somewhere else, but you're not going to get the
You can
same.
put, exactly, the monopoly is there, as in, they're the bosses on the internet. No other search engine is able to beat them. But yeah.
What? That's interesting because we are mostly involved in the Western world of business, but there's Baidu. Like, China's not using Google.
China's not
Russia's
using
not
Google.
using Google. I wonder if that's going to be part of the future. People trying to expand, because now with AI and the ability to translate pages and copy.
Maybe down the line, maybe next 10, 15 years, we might not need Google to get information. Probably search might change. Everyone is on ChatGPT. Do you think interesting times coming up ahead? And that's why I think it's very important to move with what's happening. Google is changing, AI is up.
I think search engines are always going to be that sort of, people are always going to be seeking. But paid ads, I mean, you can just write a check. That's the difference between, like with SEO and content and word of mouth and referrals. This is what separates small businesses from nationwide international brands, in my opinion, because with paid media and any sort of cold outreach, lead gen sales process, you can just decide, I want to get another 300 clients, and then you go get them. You write the check and you go get them, at least until you max out what's available. And you can't do that with content marketing. Content marketing, it's like you've built up this network and you get your SEO and you're just hoping that many people come to you. Now it's cheaper. It can be cheaper if you get a really good setup. You got to invest sweat equity and some money up front. I mean, it all costs money to build the pages, to update the pages, to
Exactly.
do the research, all that stuff. But yeah, paid ads can really be an acid test on, does your offer convert?
True. And the other thing is, and this is because I have been working in B2B SaaS for a long time. I think what really justifies paid media is the renewals that you can get. If your product is good, you can have returning or long-term contracts. For example, if it's an HR software, right? How many companies would want to switch an HR software after every year? So I think Google also takes that into account when it's charging you, because it knows that, okay, lifetime value of that customer
Yeah, they
is
want their
X.
20%. Is
So they
that a
want
good
it
ballpark for people to estimate? If my thing is 500 bucks, I'm going to end up coughing up, whether
to
it's Facebook, I'm going to cough up 20% of that per sale. In your experience, what would you tell someone starting out or struggling going? these are the five pillars, the five commandments that you need to come in to make sure that you're prepared for this.
I think being able to spend five times the dollar value you assume you'd get from that
To
one
start?
client to
Yeah.
start. I
Okay.
think, again, it's from industry to industry, but I think giving them the reality rather than underestimating,
Yep.
it's always good to keep that margin. So if your product is $30, be prepared to spend to get that one lead.
If you're selling a
And
$30
everybody.
item and you're just getting started, be prepared that you might end up spending $150
To get a lead.
in the
And
beginning.
then it's in the beginning, but then it's also up to you to upsell that $30 to meet your ROI, right?
Yeah, this is important. So what Sammy just said right there is a golden ticket, because I heard a story about a company like Procter and Gamble. Procter and Gamble, for people that don't know, they have 101 subsidiary companies under them. It's a big umbrella, megalithic international corporation. And they've got all these different companies. I heard a story that, like in Canada, where I am, when you have a baby at the hospital, you can sign this thing and then you get the baby basket. And the baby basket has all these goodies in it. It's got diapers and it's got baby food and it's got, all this little kit. And it's like a free gift that you get as a donation from these companies. But what they get in return is your information, your contact info, and they know day zero of your child's birth. And legend has it that they have a timeline of promotions over the next 25 years because they know day zero. They know when the kid's going to be crawling, when they're going to start trying to stick their fingers in sockets, when they're going to need toothbrushes, when they're going to need like school clothes. That they've got you on this timeline. So whatever they pay to get into the hospital to give you that basket of goods is recouped over the lifetime of promoting products and services to you.
Exactly.
And that's what Sammy was talking about, that you might have to, in the beginning, you might have to spend $150 to get your $30 sale. But what if you're trying to grow $1 million business selling just a $30 item? That can be a tough
Tough
slog.
thing.
You have to
Yeah.
be focused on some sort of ongoing relationship with your customers. Is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah, that is fair. And that is fair for, I think, all kinds of businesses, whether it's e-commerce, whether it's a SaaS product, whether it's a software, whether it's
Yeah.
anything, I think.
So some of the key metrics would be what? Like cost per lead, cost per sale, cost per click, lifetime customer value. Would you
I
change
think
any?
conversion rates as well.
Yep, conversion rates. So cost per lead, cost per sale, cost per click, lifetime customer value, probably cost per, well, I said cost per sale. And then you said conversion rates.
Conversion rates, yeah. Conversion rates.
Yeah, conversion rates and maybe CTR, click-through rates.
CTR as well.
Those are some of the core metrics. Now, how do you fix a campaign that's failing? Like if you've got a campaign and it's not working, how do you test? Let's start at the fundamentals. How do you know when you're launching something that the offer is even going to convert? And how do you work through that problem?
I think starting point would be understanding what others are running, competitor analysis. I think that's where you get a direction of what are others doing basically that are within your industry. That's number one. Followed by looking at keywords, do your own keyword research, really understand the psychology behind what people are putting into Google. Look at multiple ad copies, get ideas from there. We have AI now, so definitely leverage AI. Ad copies, and then make sure that ad copy is tied to what the person sees on the landing page. So as you mentioned, if it's a family restaurant, when you click on it and you see a biker bar, try to avoid that. So if you're doing ads, make sure the relationship is linked to each other. Everything is tied, copy down to landing page. To answer your question of how I would troubleshoot, I think is to go reverse. Look at the landing page, see the data. If we are getting a lot of clicks, your CTR is good, your CTR hasn't dropped. Look at your conversion rates. Have they dropped? If they have dropped, you understand it's a landing page problem. I think that's how I would troubleshoot. Landing page, looking at ad copies. And if all those are good and you're still seeing things drop, maybe there's been a shift in market. Maybe you need to do more keyword research. Maybe there are new keywords that are increasing in search demand. So, yeah.
You bring up two good points. One is not everything stays static. So you might have something that's working for a while, but now ChatGPT comes out and your offer is dead in the water. Pre-chat, you were collecting money left, right, and center. Now chat comes out and the marketplace is different. That's, I think, a dynamic that a lot of people don't expect, especially when a lot of people are working a job because you're hired to do this role and I'm at work and I'm doing this role. And then often the boss will come or at some point and say, hey, we're going to train you to do some other things. When you're marketing in the marketplace, it's like trying to understand a mob that's not really talking to you. It's almost having to watch what they do versus listen to what they say. I have actually Glenn Livingston. I don't mean to keep bringing him up, but he used to do focus groups for these big Fortune 500 companies trying to figure out product launches. And I remember he told a story once about how they did this focus group and they had four or five products or whatever. And at the end, he was like, okay, so thank you everyone for coming. This was a paid focus group, right? Thank you everyone. Molly's got your checks. You can get them from her on your way out. Also, I managed to just talk to the manager and good news, you can actually take a product home with you. Just grab whichever one you want on your way out the door. And everything else was just a dog and pony show because people will tell you what they think you want to hear. But at the end of the day, what's the product that they take home? What's the one that they actually want? And it was like a 40-minute thing just for that moment. By the way, just grab whatever one you
Just
want
grab
and
order.
watch attentively. The other thing that you said, I'm trying to expand on your points because I think they're really important. And I think what you said is really smart. And I want to make sure people understand the depth of it. Is that also pre-internet? Because you talked about looking for more keywords. Pre-internet, a lot of this was sort of direct response marketing. So you would have ads and you would put them in newspapers and magazines, or you would carpet bomb neighborhoods with letters, like a snail mail. You would mail everyone in a subdivision or whatever by zip code. But sometimes you would suck out all the buyers. You would target a magazine. The magazine's got whatever, 100,000 subscribers, and you advertise in it for 6 months, and like that's it. You got to go somewhere else and come back once they've had a chance to add more subscribers to the magazine. And so we're talking about things like market saturation, and that's a tough one to know because markets are unknown and unknowable. Nobody fully understands how big is the market actually. You have idea,
Exactly.
but are you penetrating it? So those I think are really important. We talked about a couple, three things that I think are really important. One is having more than just the front end sale to profit from. Advertising is a way to get new people into the business on demand, but that now may not be where you make the money. We've all heard about loss leaders, printers, video
Exactly.
game consoles. There's a loss
Exactly.
leader that gets them in, and then you have to make the back end sales. The second one that you mentioned so we talked about lifetime customer value. Is the what's happening in the market? What are your competitors
Exactly.
doing?
Search trends. Yeah.
And then the third is that one. There may only be that many, because I think that's, is that a problem? Is that part of why people have a hard time when they try to scale their ad campaigns? Like, why not just hey.
So that is one part of the problem. The other thing is, when it comes to scaling, it's not always about putting in more money and expecting more ROI to come. Now, that's something I have noticed personally. Like, their businesses, like WeFace, for example, where we were spending a lot of money, but we realized the cost per MQL, basically, the cost per marketing qualified lead, starts to increase when we reach a certain budget. And that's when we realized, okay, it means that when we start spending this much, we've like hit the top. So
Right.
it's just more
You're
ad
just spending more
spend.
money. Yeah.
We're just spending more money. And that's when we realized, okay, we don't need to spend so much on Google or on Bing. What we really need to do is then maybe improve our conversion rates better.
Yep.
Stop spending on keywords that have been getting us a lot of clicks, but very
That's
few
right.
conversions. Where cost per conversions are very high.
Optimize, yep.
Optimize that way. And then we realized we were able to bring down cost per conversion down by almost like 40, 50% in the
Wow.
last 2 years. Yeah. So I think it's all about controlling how much you spend. So it's when you, that's part of scaling as well, right?
Yep.
You are reducing the cost per MQL, which makes it more cost efficient and encourages management to continue to spend.
Yep.
And then you can use that budget into other campaigns, brand awareness. You can do a lot of other things with that.
Right.
So that's, I think, scaling. A lot of people think it's pump in more money. We'll pump in 500K, we'll make 20 million. But
Yeah, I remember my wife and my now I have two daughters, but at the time it was my one daughter and I, we went to Singapore. And I remember I Googled top 10 things to do in Singapore. And when I did it, I got curious and I went and looked up the Google keyword results, and I something like 50,000 searches a month. Because I realized this is probably the only time in my life I'm ever going to Google it. Like, I'm going to
exactly.
Google this one time. I'm going to see the list of top 10 things, and I'm never going to Google it again, probably. Even if I
It's
come back to
true.
Singapore, I remember that top 10 list. And so when I looked, I figured that's like a constant churn. It's like a wave hitting a beach every month of fresh blood. If you were doing local tours, I was like, that's what some of this stuff is when you do keyword research. It's like mind share volume on a regular basis. So, like you're saying, this is it. This is the churn. This is how many salmon are swimming up the river every month.
Exactly.
And we can just try to
Exactly.
optimize. Yep. And other strategies that businesses that are listening to this may not consider is like having referral. Maybe you install pools. So you go, well, I don't have a lot of back-end offers I can make, Daryl. What about a maintenance package? What about a referral program? What about decks and patios? What about furniture? What about swimming lessons? What about fixing the roof? You don't even have to be the one that provides all this stuff. I remember when
True.
I worked in Tokyo for 3 years as a consultant. When I came back, I started a martial arts school. But before I did that, I needed to figure out something to do, and I ended up driving cab. I just needed something, and I drove taxi. And this is pre the apps. So I remember sitting in the car sometime, and no one taught me. I'm like, all right, well, I got a car, but I got to go where the people are. Like, I can sit here and wait for someone on the radio to tell me I've got money, or I can go find them. And I realized the only reason why I couldn't do it on my own, one, there was like a license, sure. But the other one was that they had the phone number that people called. It wasn't that I didn't have a car. I had a car. They had a car. We both had cars, but they had the phone number that people
Phone number
called.
there.
And that was the most important part. They had
Important
the
part.
license and the phone number that people called. So if you install pools and you go, well, Daryl, this is great. And what you and Sammy are saying about having like a lifetime customer value, I'm going, but I install a pool. What? I can't install a new pool for them every summer.
True.
Yeah, but you can refer them to other businesses and get a referral fee. You can now do an audit and go, hey, do you guys need to improve your patio? Hey, you really need to put a fence around this pool or else you're going to get in trouble with the bylaw officer. Hey, did you want me to come back and maintain this, you know, once a week, twice a quarter, you know, once a year? Like, there's all these add-ons and referrals. Like I said, decks and patios.
Exactly. Exactly. And that brings me to another point which just came to my mind is, so there was this time while I was working in a digital agency, we were doing marketing for attorneys. So there was this attorney that was in Charlotte, basically, and or was it Florida? He was one in one of the states. He was top ranking, a personal injury attorney, and he was number one on Google. But he used to complain every month saying, you know what, I'm not getting customers. We check his Google Analytics. You're seeing you're getting the sessions. We're seeing people filling out your forms. You're getting leads. Well, these leads are not converting. But when you look at his Google Maps, you see one star, two stars, you know, where you get my point, right? Having a service that is, there is a limitation to what a marketer can do, right? You as a product or service also needs to, you need to have those, that credibility, those reviews need to be there. So when it comes to customers, so if a new customer comes, I think a good thing every marketer should do is also spend some time understanding their business values. Do they care about reviews or testimonials? Because if it's a shitty product, you put in $500,000, you're not going to get anything.
Yeah, the world's becoming so transparent now. I mean, even look at Big Pharma. They're getting, I don't know, at the time of this recording, the Big Pharma is getting a shit kicking by Robert Kennedy Jr. in the United States. They just pulled $500 million worth of funding for mRNA vaccine platforms. They've been unable to prove that this is safe. In some cases, it probably caused more variants of COVID than it prevented because they were leaky vaccines, which means it didn't kill it. Typically, a vaccine is like you give someone a dead piece of a virus or whatever, so their immune system recognizes it and defends against it and kills it. But the ones we had during COVID, they didn't kill it. They would just prevent you from getting sick until it wore off and you had to get the next booster. But that means it still lives inside you. Looks like you learned this one trick punch and it doesn't kill it, but it just knocks it down and it just keeps getting back up until it figures out a way around your one punch. But anyways, my point on this, sorry for going on the sidebar. I'm sure the FBI are probably listening to me now. But the sidebar is that even with these massive budgets, they're having major PR issues at this point. Even if you don't have an ethical bone in your body, if you're trying to make good money long term, have a generational business, you have to love on people. You have to love on your customers, love on your vendors, love on your staff, right?
Build on your brand, basically.
Yeah.
Branding is important. Make a solid service product. I think that's what business owners should focus on.
I love that. So some of your advice has been to do a serious competitor analysis. You don't necessarily know the money they're making, but secret shop them if you can. Use tools to try to spy on what their ads
Ad
are.
copy,
Yeah, their ad
exactly.
copy.
Ads library is
Yep.
one good tool to get an idea of what they're
You're
doing.
talking about
A lot
Facebook
of
ad library, right?
Not only Facebook, to be honest, Reddit has its own
Ad
library. LinkedIn has its own. I think every major, Google has its own as well. Google's ads transparency is a tool with,
You can go look.
Google ads as well.
Stop.
Seriously.
Give me a slow pitch, why don't you? So, for people that don't understand what Sammy just said, he's talking about ad transparency. I love this. Sammy, I'm glad we did this today. Ad transparency means that because of political manipulation, because of the Cambridge, whatever, Facebook's manipulating the elections with Facebook ads, there has to be transparent who's advertising and what they're seeing. So you can go on
Exactly.
Facebook and look up any, Facebook has an ad library and you can look up any Facebook page and it'll show you the ads that they're running right now. But this
Exactly.
means that all the other ones have had to follow suit. I apparently have been asleep at the wheel. I didn't know Google. So this means
Google
that you
has its
can look
own
up
as well.
all your competitors' ads on Google and see, I'm guessing I haven't seen them, but I know at least with Facebook. Like this is something, here's a golden nugget. I like to look at Facebook ads library and I like to look at ads that are a year old. I like to obsess over ads that have been running for at
Doing that
least a
out.
year. Because if they've been paying for that ad for a year, it's got to be working.
What I like doing is looking at those that have been running for the last 6, 7 months or year. Look at those that they've repeated again. Like you'd see that, okay, this was run,
Yeah.
they ran it like in December of 2024, and then they brought it back in March, April again. So that gives you some direction as to what to make basically when it comes to
Yeah,
ads.
because it's such an acid test, paid ads, that the fact you used to have to pay hundreds of dollars a month to be able to see what competitors were doing. Now you're just telling me that all everyone's got an ad library now, and it's
Everyone has it.
and Google, like that is such a you can so now you can just go look at all your competitors on Google and find that. And it doesn't mean necessarily you're going to copy it, but now you have a better understanding of what's working and what isn't working. Yeah, you don't necessarily know the keywords they're targeting, but you know what headlines, what images, offers.
Exactly. Exactly.
That
And then the interesting thing with Google's, it also gives you what they're running on YouTube. So you get an idea of what their video ads are.
Shut up. This is man. Wow. So if people don't get it because some people listen and they're like, oh, but I don't want competitors. Listen, in business, the reality is the pioneers get the arrows, the settlers get the land. I'm gonna say that again. The pioneers get the arrows. The pioneers, the first ones on the beach, are the ones that get shot. The people who come after them just get to move in and pick a lot and build a house,
I agree.
right? And so the fact that you can just go and see what other people have spent potentially millions of dollars to test and work in their landing pages, you don't want to be on a road with no traffic. You want to be at a busy food court and be just a unique and best option among all the other ones around you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because if you're the only restaurant on a road, it might be because there's no one on that road. But if you're at a busy food court, you want competitors. It means people are making money.
Money.
You can just go to Google Ad Library, which is the biggest ad library probably on planet Earth. You can see what your competitors are doing and not doing. What do you feel about remarketing, like video remarketing? How do you feel for the whole put up a problem video that talks about a problem that your product may or may not solve as a piece of content and then remarket to people that watch that video, the
So
actual
I think there are two ways to answer this question. And one way is, let's assume we are talking to an e-commerce business owner. So for example, let's say you're selling shoes online. Remarketing is going to be one of the highest ROI positive campaigns where you would actually see that your ROAS is 7 times. Reason being, those people that have already added to cart, maybe an abandoned cart, you're retargeting them. Those that initiated checkouts, for example. So you're really just giving them that nudge to die. Plus, if you have a lot of data, here's how I'll put it. Remarketing is very dependent on the data you have in your ad account. So if you have a lot of data, remarketing is going to be very ROI effective for you. That's one way to answer that question from a e-commerce perspective. From a business software or a product perspective, remarketing is also not maybe greatly ROI. Direct ROI might not be there, but attributed ROI is there. Attributed meaning they might not convert from that creative. They might see your ad and then maybe Google you and then come through maybe direct or organic. Think of remarketing from a B2B SaaS in that perspective, where attributed conversions and those conversions have a good lifetime value. So that's how I would say remarketing is definitely very important. I do a lot of remarketing on LinkedIn since it's a B2B SaaS product. And I think that's the only LinkedIn campaign that really gives you a good cost per attributed conversion. You might not see it in your CRM, or you might not see it as an original source that was that landing page that you've put on LinkedIn, but that conversion attributed in the last 30 days would show that you got like 5 or 6 conversions because someone saw that ad and then later on from another medium they became your customer.
I love that. Yeah, that's the other problem. Prior to the internet, and even in the early days of the internet, advertising was very linear. I put this magazine ad in, I offer a coupon, people redeem the coupon, and we're off to the races. But now it's so circular. They see my ad, they go Google me, they hop into a forum, they search social media, they jump into a Discord chat group, they go ask AI, and then they come back and buy. And it's just such a circular thing.
100%. And I think the challenge is, unfortunately, at least I don't know if you've ever seen any good attribution tools. The, you can say, biggest challenge that every
Challenge.
marketer has
Yeah.
is attribution.
What he's talking about is knowing where the sales come from.
You take up from.
In my career working online, I've never had Google Analytics match all the other tracking tools. Like if I'm using three tracking tools to track my web visits, they never match up.
But they would
Never
never.
match up. They're never all the same. What matters is how much I spent and how much I made, and everything else is just trend lines.
Trend line,
That's really
exactly.
it. It's just, is it trending up or trending?
Down.
UTM fields are good if you can get them to work, but even then,
It's still tough.
Sammy, this has been a great call. What do you feel are some of the most important kind of skills or behaviors to develop as we walk into this AI future?
I think number one, love numbers. I think if you want to walk into paid search, being number oriented and really going down into how much money you're making, how much you spent, looking at the whole funnel critically, mathematically is very important. I think that's one skill that you should love or have at least, being able to compute basic numbers, being able to also allocate budget based off of maths. I think that's something you should be able to do. That's core skill set when it comes to paid
Allocate
marketing.
budget according to what?
Geos or product types, you should be able to allocate them mathematically, not just by saying, okay, I'm going to make it $100 and tomorrow 150. I mean, have that math behind. I'm going to increase X percentage from the allotted budget so that you have to go very calculated.
It's spending of money for profit, which is, you can try to have fun with it, but it's not grim, but
Yes.
it's serious. So you want to
Serious.
treat it serious. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. How do you think AI is going to impact this? Where do you see, how do you see AI changing this in the near future?
I think AI is going to change a lot of things by making it fast for you to get things done. Like, for example, analysis I usually do on Excel sheets using a lot of formulas, a lot of VLOOKUPs. And that has really become very easy. Like, what I do now is just go into ChatGPT, open O3, upload an Excel file full of data, and then tell it, give me a full funnel. Define everything, of course, educate it. And it really, that 8 hours work comes down to 2 hours. I think AI is going to make you one efficient. And AI can give you directions on what the numbers are saying, but you need to be able to translate those numbers. I think that's where AI has a limitation, where it can't tell a story behind why this happened. So that's where you come in. But I think AI is going to change a lot of things by, number one, making it fast for you to get things. And I'm seeing people making videos from the Google, I think VO3 or something. I forgot what they call it, but you can now, those videos that you used to wait for a long time, you just give it a few scripts prompts and it
Boom.
does that. So I think AI is going to improve efficiency. And if you're not picking up with AI, you're just going to be, then you're going to be replaced by AI.
It's not AI that's going to replace you. It's humans using AI
It's human,
that are going to
exactly.
replace you. They've been saying we're going to get rid of people forever. When we had tractors, we're not going to need farmers. When we had calculators, we're not going to need mathematicians. When we had spreadsheets, we're not going to need accountants anymore. We
Exactly.
had books, we're not going to need CPAs. But all that really happened is people became more efficient. We just have better vehicles. I don't see anyone deciding, I'm going to stop driving the bus and I'm just going to sit here and die and let the bus choose its own destination. I
True,
don't see that happening. Did you know,
exactly.
as a side tangent, I like sharing this. Did you know that fertility clinics that are helping couples get pregnant, they demonstrate over and over again that when the sperm and the egg meet, there is a flash of light. Have you seen this? It blows my mind. You can see videos of the sperm and egg meet. There's a flash of light, which means that each of us literally has a spark inside of us. We
Inside.
started with a spark of light. And that to me is the closest. The scientific evidence I've seen for me that makes me feel confident that I can believe that I have a soul, that I have a spark. And that I feel gives me some sort of confidence. Maybe it's false confidence, but that AI can never replace that.
True.
It has to have a spark.
As you said, can't replace you, but you can get replaced by people that are using AI.
I love that. Sammy, this has been a great call. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I think we pretty much covered everything around paid
Yeah.
marketing, and it was really fun speaking.
Yeah. People want to reach out if they want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, if they have questions. What are some of the best ways for them to contact you?
I think LinkedIn is a very good medium. I'm on LinkedIn. Probably share a link to my
Sure.
LinkedIn.
Yeah. So if you want to reach out to Sammy, you can find him on LinkedIn. It's linkedin.com. Sammy, Sami, Sharif, Sharieff. That's Sharieff. IEF, Sammy, Sharieff, Sami. So go check out Sammy. Let him know you enjoyed the interview. Ask him some questions. Sammy, thank you so much for making time, knowing you have your own direct reports, your own priorities, your own ad campaigns to manage. Thank you for taking your time away from it all to
Thank
come
you
and
so
help
much.
us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great speaking to you.